Is the next generation of women ready for marriage and parenting? Here's Dana Gresh.
You know, what's frightening to me is we've had the issue of women, of young women saying, I don't know if I want to submit to my husband when I have a husband. I don't know if I really want to have a husband. They're increasingly saying, I don't know if I want to have kids at all, ever.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that be a good thing. I don't want to be tied to that. I don't want to be slowed down. It's frightening to me that this isn't just a cultural pressure anymore, but it's something within the church.
Yes.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Wagglemuth, co-author of Lies Young Women Believe, for February 9th, 2018. For over a decade, two books have helped women set their lives on the truth. Nancy DeMoss Wagglemuth wrote Lies Women Believe and The Truth That Sets Them Free 16 years ago. Coming up on February 19th, the new, updated, and revised version will be released, and you'll hear Nancy teach through that material here on Revive Our Hearts. This week, we're focusing on the book Lies Young Women Believe by Nancy and co-author Dana Gresh. The revised version came out this week. Today, Nancy and Dana will talk about lies young women believe about their future, such as,
the things I do now won't affect my future.
Or,
having a career outside the home is more valuable and fulfilling than just being a wife and mom.
One young lady in our audience expressed well her frustration with political correctness.
All I've wanted to do my whole life is just be a wife and a mom, and, you know, and that's my goal. But at the same time, I'm also going to nursing school right now, or I'm getting ready to go into nursing school, because that's also something I'm very interested in, is the medical field. But at the same time, I have never experienced it until I got into college, where it seems like there's this, just this huge drive for women to just stand out and feel like they have to be somebody. So it's just something that I'm experiencing now that I've never experienced before, in that in the secular college, you know, in a paper that you write, it's not okay to write lady, you know, or to write police man. You have to write police officer. You know, it's very much about feminism. And so I guess it'd just be helpful to know kind of like how to handle that and how to be able to be, you know, a person who is an effective woman for God. And, you know, she doesn't have to completely stand back in the shadow, but at the same time, she knows her place, and she's doing the things that God wants her to do with a gentle and a quiet spirit.
Nancy says there is confusion and a lack of clear thinking when it comes to perspectives about marriage and motherhood.
And that is the fruit, really, the result of now decades of an intentional effort on the part of some to minimize the value and the importance of women as bearers and nurturers of life, and to say that that is a second-rate, inferior calling. And so this younger generation today, I think, has never known anything other than to assume that, of course, you go and pursue a career, and whatever you do in relation to family is secondary or later.
This is one of the questions that we deal with in Lies Young Women Believe that's just so near and dear to my heart.
Dana recalls 10 years ago with fondness. That was when she and Nancy first wrote Lies Young Women Believe and The Truth That Sets Them Free.
I had a full nest at home. My son Robbie was in 11th grade. My girls were in middle school. I was a happy clam of a mom. Now my nest is empty, and I feel I have been fired from the best job I will ever have in my entire life. I am the mom who, when I go to the grocery store and I have to buy the small ketchup instead of the family size, I burst into tears. Now, I'm not, I have a great purpose, and the Lord's given me a really exciting life. So I'm not like in depression or anything, but I miss my kids so much. I miss that job so much. It is the most wonderful job you will ever have. And you know it the first moment you hold that sweet baby in your arms, that your life has changed forever. And so that's why it makes me really sad that one of the lies we had to deal with back in 2007 when we first wrote the book, and it's even more of a problem today, is having a career outside the home is more valuable and fulfilling than being just a wife and a mom. We talk with girls all the time who are bent on a great college degree, which I might add is going to cause, in most cases, a great amount of debt. And God has a lot of warnings in his word about that. Or they're like, you know, I just need to have a fulfilling job. It's okay if I'm a mom, but I also need to have a job, or I'm just not going to feel like I have value. And this is a lie that our culture has readily fed them. We found some really interesting research when we first wrote Lies Young Women Believe, and it was that in 1987, only about 20% of Christians felt that women should not emphasize the roles of mother and wife. You want a young woman to grow up dreaming of being a wife and a mom? That's not a good idea. She's worth so much more than that. Now, I think that sounds like a lie, but in 1987, it was only 20% of the Christian population. In 2007, right about the time we originally wrote Lies Young Women Believe, it had grown to 47% of Christians thought that it was a bad idea for us to tell our girls that it's important to be a wife and a mom. That just grieves my heart. And you know, I have a conversation in Lies Young Women Believe that I had with my son and his friend. They were about 11th grade, as I said. And I said, you know, this is a lie I'm writing about in Lies Young Women Believe. What do you think about that? Like, the lie is basically that the most important thing a teenage girl can think about is having a fulfilling career. And they kind of looked at each other and they said, okay, so here's the thing. If we said that, if we had that kind of attitude as guys about not wanting a wife and not wanting kids and about thinking that a career was the most important thing we would ever do in our lives, they would consider us, and I'm quoting an 11th grade boy here, to be jerks. They didn't get it. They're like, we're supposed to want to be godly, good men who are gentlemen and want to have wives and want to be fathers one day. So what's wrong with girls also wanting that?
The premise behind the title of Nancy and Dana's book is that lies enslave and God's truth liberates. So what is God's truth when it comes to being a wife and a mom?
You know, the Bible says that one of the greatest treasures that a man can have is finding a good wife.
Proverbs chapter 18, verse 22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord.
And I think that we can conclude that it's also a treasure for us to find a good husband. And the Bible also says that one of the greatest blessings we can have is having children.
Psalm 127 verses 3 through 5. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them.
Our culture has dismantled that value, and the Christian church is believing it and swallowing it hook, line, and sinker.
Nancy DeMoss-Walgemuth explains that the biblical view of being a wife and a mother goes deeper than just the practical questions of who does what.
It's not just what a woman's role is, but it goes back to this whole thing of our calling and our design as women, and the fact that God made women and men for distinctive, unique purposes to bring him glory in this world. That's what it's all about. It's not about our fulfillment or our happiness. And I think we've had stripped from us in the last two or three generations, this sense of what it even means to be a woman. I had a grown woman, a middle-aged woman, say to me, actually we're sitting in this very room about a week ago, and she said, I'm 53 years old, and she says, I have never been able to embrace the fact that I am a woman and what it means to be a woman. She says, I understand what it means to be a Christian, but when you talk to me about being a Christian woman, I don't get that. And I, whatever it is, I don't think I embrace it, was essentially what she was saying. Well, she's in her 50s. Now you take these younger women who've grown up with moms who don't know what it means to be a woman, and what is God's design? What is God's purpose? And how do we as women uniquely glorify God? And going back to God's creation, which he said was good, it does tie the calling of a woman in a significant way into her role as a helper to her husband and as a bearer and nurturer of life. I mean, the name Eve means life giver, mother of all living. And having babies is something that to date men cannot do. And a specific part, not just physiologically, biologically, but spiritually. It's a part of the calling of women. And there's almost zero comprehension of that today, and very little even within the church, sadly.
I would love to hear you speak to whether or not you feel like the world gives you permission to desire to be a wife, to desire to be a mother.
Wife, mother, and author Erin Davis moderated a question and answer time with Dana Gresh, Nancy, and young women in the Revive Our Hearts audience.
One thing that I've been told is that, you know, I need to have a fallback plan. You know, what if I do get married and something happens to my husband and I need a way of supporting my family? And I agree with it to some extent, but I guess I don't know how to work through that exactly.
Okay, good. Anybody else have thoughts on whether you feel free to have your home be your highest aspiration?
Well, I think the world tells us that, or we tell ourselves that we can be a wife and a mother and have a career. Like, I think they tell us that you can have it all. But the truth is, I mean, I think that's a very difficult thing to do.
Sure. My wise friend Dana told me last week, Erin, you can have it all, but you can't have it all at once. And I didn't want to hear that because I'd like to have it all right now. But can you guys offer some advice for these ladies that are navigating this terrain?
That's the first thing that runs through my heart is from the Proverbs 31 woman, which you're all familiar with. Her first priority is her husband. It starts out talking about her husband, and then it talks about her children. But then it talks about all these other wonderful things that she is. She's a merchant. She's a seamstress. She's a businesswoman. She's like superwoman on steroids, really. But it says in here, verse 12, it says, she brings him, her husband, good and not harm all the days of her life. That means today, when you woke up and you dressed and you chose what you would wear, that you wore an outfit that was not only pleasing to God, but that would protect your virtue and your modesty because you're doing him good today. That means that when you go to school next week, whether you're a nursing student in college or whether you're a ninth grader at a Christian high school or in a home school or in a public school, that your thoughts are in part about the fact that one day, God, you may bless me with a husband. And will this day that I'm living, studying as a student, bless him one day? All the days of your life. I believe as women, it's a great honor that we could take a verse like this and apply it each morning to our hearts and say, God, I don't, you know, I'm only in ninth grade, Lord, but if you have a husband for me one day, I want to live this day so well that I could look back and say, I did my husband good on that day in ninth grade.
This morning in my quiet time, I went back to I've been studying through the Psalms. And a couple of days ago, I was in Psalm 45, and this morning when I got up, I had actually passed that place, but I just felt prompted to go back to that passage as we prepared for this day. And I just want to share with you in our closing moments a few glimpses about what the Lord spoke to me through that passage. Psalm 45, if you're not familiar with it, is titled A Love Song. And it's a story of a wedding between a king and his bride. And there are two parts to the psalm. Actually, it starts out with just an introduction that says, my heart is overflowing with a pleasing theme. I address my verses to the king. My tongue is like the pen of a ready scribe. Someone says here, there's a beautiful story I'm getting ready to tell you. It's a song. It's a love song. It's the ultimate romance. And then the first stanza is a description of the king. And he is, if you remember Old Testament Jewish wedding customs, they would have this betrothal where they would get engaged. They were committed to be married. And then the bridegroom would go off and he'd prepare a place for the bride to live. And then the day would come when he would come back to get his bride. And they would be officially, formally, finally married. And so this is the processional, the first part where the king is coming to get his bride. And it says, you are the most handsome of the sons of men. Grace is poured upon your lips. And it calls him the mighty one. It's really a picture of Jesus, the heavenly bridegroom that is being described here. There is no man on earth who fits this whole description except for Jesus. And it talks about his splendor, his majesty, how he's victorious over his enemies, how his throne reigns forever and ever, and he loves righteousness. And it just describes this amazing bridegroom who is a picture of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And it talks about how he is glad as he's coming to get his bride. He's fragrant. There's music. There's scents that are going on. This is just an incredible wedding procession. And then you've seen this magnificent procession of this king, Christ himself. And then the picture turns to the bride. And it starts to describe her, and it's an appeal to her. And it says, "Hear, O daughter, and consider and incline your ear. Forget your people and your father's house." What it's saying is it's time to leave and cleave. It's time to come away from the earthly attachments, from the things you love, the things you hold dear. And it's time to come and be united with your bridegroom in marriage. So it says, forget your people and your father's house. You're going to be leaving them. And then it says, and this phrase just stopped me in my tracks, "And the king will desire your beauty." Mm. Now, it has just described this amazing, awesome, majestic king. And it says to this bride-to-be, the king, that king, will desire your beauty. And I just stopped and I found myself worshiping the Lord and saying, in light of who he is, what is there in me that he would desire? I mean, I don't think of myself as beautiful, but he does. And he desires that. And we've talked about how there is in the heart of every woman this longing to be desired, this longing to be pursued. And I thought, I am pursued. I am loved. I am desired. I am esteemed. I'm valued, not because there's anything in me, but because he has eyes of love. And because he has chosen me to be his bride. And then it says, since he is your Lord, bow to him. Worship him. Just thank him. Say, thank you, Lord, for loving me the way that you do. Whether you give me a guy, whether you give me my hopes and dreams, of some may have the desire. I have some really precious friends who have always longed to be a wife and a mother. And God has not granted, in some cases, that desire of their hearts. And they've had to offer it up as a sacrifice to the Lord, because God doesn't bring that into every woman's life. But it says whether he does or he doesn't, whether he does, writes the script the way you would have written it or not, since he is your Lord, bow to him. Just worship him. Thank him for his love and say, Lord, you are enough. If you're all I ever had, I can be satisfied with you. Now, we're natural, we're human, we have desires, we have longings, and there's nothing wrong with those longings. But ultimately, it comes down to saying, he is my Lord, and I bow before him, and I worship him. And then it describes this. It says, all glorious is the princess in her chamber, with robes interwoven with gold. In many colored robes, she is led to the king, with her virgin companions following behind her. And there's a sense of her being brought to the place. It's kind of like you see it at a wedding where the groom comes and stands up at the front, and then the bride starts the processional down the aisle to come to meet her groom. And I sometimes like watching the guy while his bride's coming down the aisle, and you just see he is sparkling. He is delighted. Sometimes he's seen her for the first time in this spectacular dress, you know, and it's like he's never seen her before, and he's just spellbound. He's enthralled with her beauty, is how the NIV translation says it there. That's how God feels about us as we approach him. She comes, she's led to the king, and I love this phrase, with joy and gladness. They are led along, this is the bride and her attendants, as they enter the palace of the king. And I thought, you know, Lord, when you called us to serve you, to follow you, to swim upstream, to be countercultural, you didn't say we just have to grit our teeth and bear it. Yes, this life will be hard. Yes, there will be suffering. Yes, you got to say no to your flesh, and you got to obey God. And you know, there is obedience and there's sacrifice and there's suffering in the Christian life, but there is also tons and tons of joy and gladness. She is led to the king with joy and gladness, and she's taken into his palace. And then very discreetly there, it doesn't say what happens once they go in the palace. But what happens is they're married and they consummate that love relationship in the most intimate possible way. They've been saved for each other. We have been saved for Jesus. Now, there's a very earthly sense in which you can apply this to your marriage and being saved physically for the one that you will marry. And that's a precious gift for you and for your husband to be someday. But there's an ultimate sense that is greater than all of that. And that is that we've been saved for Christ, our heavenly bridegroom. And we are being led with joy and gladness into his palace, where we will spend eternity with him in the most intimate possible relationship. And you know, when I get that perspective, when I see the God's wedding story and the story he's writing for my life, then I can endure. Everything else becomes kind of piddly by comparison. So I didn't have a good hair day. You know, I mean, that can wreck my day. It can wreck your day, but it doesn't have to, if we see it in the context of God's great picture. So someone rejected me, or there are guys who reject, or no guy ever pays me any attention at all, or they don't even know I exist. Or in some cases, some of you have experienced rejection from your parents. And could anything be more painful? And those things happen, and they hurt, and they're hard, and it's not the way God intended that it should be. But you know what? You can live through all of that and more. And some of the things that are going to happen in your life that are hard, you haven't even dreamed of yet. There's more to come. There's suffering ahead. But you can endure it, and you can go with joy and gladness, because you know that God is leading you toward the palace of the King, where you're going to spend eternity. And I just say, keep your eyes on the finish line and know that it's worth it. It is worth running the race. It's worth being faithful. It's worth keeping yourself for Christ, pursuing him, swimming upstream, being countercultural, not going with the flow. The flow is going the wrong way. Jesus said it. He said, wide is the gate that leads to destruction. And it may seem happy right now, but its end is really not desirable at all. So you make the hard choices now. You say yes to the Lord, yes to his plans, yes to how he works in our lives through his word, through human authorities, through godly counsel. You say yes to that, and God says, I've got something stored up for you that is greater and sweeter and richer than anything you could possibly imagine. And our heart in writing this book is for you to experience that. We still believe lies. We still wrestle with those. And we're not living out to the fullest possible extent all the things we want to, but we know that it's worth pressing on, pressing in that battle, and saying yes, Lord. And that's what we want for you.
Making a habit of saying yes, Lord, will reap rewards in your life, whether you're a young woman under 20 or a young woman over 100. We've been listening as Nancy DeMoss Wagglemuth challenged a group of young ladies to build their lives on God's Word. She's been talking with Erin Davis, who manages the Lies Young Women Believe blog for Revive Our Hearts. And we also heard from Dana Gresh. She and Nancy co-authored the book Lies Young Women Believe and the Truth That Sets Them Free. They have just revised and updated the book, and that book launched this week. We'd like to send you a copy when you support Revive Our Hearts with a donation of any amount. You can call 1-800-569-5959 to give your gift and ask for the book, or visit reviveourhearts.com. Also, think about a group of young women you could go through the book with. You can order additional copies and get the study guide to help your discussion. That's at reviveourhearts.com or call 1-800-569-5959. When a married couple pray and focus on God's truth together, it will have a huge effect on their relationship. Next week, Gary and Lisa Thomas talk about how to focus on the Lord together while drawing closer to one another. Please be back for Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss Wagglemuth wants to help you know the truth. It's an outreach of Life Action Ministries.